Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to yet another segment of Afternoon Satsang being streamed to you live from God's own radio channel, Radio Sai Global Harmony, studios at Prashanthi Nilayam, Puttaparthi. And as always, from Team Radio Sai, I am Arvind, and along with me is Brother Prem from Team Radio Sai, both of us offering our most humble salutations at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan before we begin this afternoon satsang. Last week, dear listeners, we had announced sort of the topic that we would be dealing this week, and it is, do we seek Swami or do we seek what Swami gives us? So it shall be our endeavor today to throw more light on this topic through Bhagwan's grace, His love and blessings. And with that, let me welcome Brother Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and Sairam to all our listeners tuning in from every part of the world. Arvind, we had last week asked our listeners if anybody wants to send in their ideas about this topic. Hmm. We did get a few ideas. In fact, we've got a few other ideas from feedback we've got. One very interesting idea is one person written about the creator versus the creation, in the sense of which came first, did the creation come first or the, you know, it's a very hotly debated topic even in the philosophical circle, in the theosophical circle, where they say, did man create God or God create man?
Yes, because both ways, if you see, Prem, man has no existence without God. That is what we believe. We have no life without Swami. But there is also an equally powerful and evocative thought which says, God has no existence without man.
Right.
And it is not only in an argumentative style, even when we examine Swami's statement of, you know, I separated myself from myself so that I can love myself, it is almost as if God too has a need for man. I mean, God's existence depends on man, and man's existence depends on God. So it is indeed a very interesting perspective of creation versus creator, as to which came first. But I think, Prem, today what we are planning to discuss is another kind of creation versus creator. In terms of, do we give importance to the creation or do we give importance to the creator?
Exactly. You know, even as we reveal the topic to all our listeners, I'm reminded of a very, very poignant moment, you know, when Swami was speaking to the students and the staff in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. I think most likely it must have been a Trayi session.
Okay.
In the course of that talk, Swami, you know, said this statement, which was, you know, you could say that it was kind of heavy for people who are listening to what Swami was saying. Because Swami said, many people come to me, many people have come to me. Swami said, students come to me for education. Mm. I give them education, they take education and they leave. People come to me with health problems. And Swami said, I solve their health problems and they go back healthy. And people come to me with relationship problems, and I solve their problems, and they leave. And there are parents who come to me seeking alliance for their children, and I find suitable matches for their children, and they're happy, and they leave. But who comes to me for me? Who comes here for me? And you know, Swami left it at that, clearly making a clear demarcation between those who come for Swami and those who come seeking something from Swami.
It must have been a very embarrassing silence there, Prem, because I'm sure even if we ask this question of ourselves, I don't think we can thump our hearts and say that we came only for Swami. Somehow, when I look back at my own life, I feel that I feel that the only longing in my life, the only thing that I desire is Swami. And I think theoretically this is the aspiration or desire of every devotee. But somehow we get lost, you know. Even today when I look back, I feel though Swami is the ultimate objective for me, I have always sought what Swami was giving, you know, whether it is security, a sense of security, a sense of peace, a sense of safety, you know, whether it be from known sources of so-called danger or unknown sources. You felt that being with God, it made you safe, it gave a protective sheath around you. And I feel, I cannot say that I have sought Swami for Swami. I think I have always sought Swami for the things that He gave me.
And that's the important point which you made, you know. It's not just things which Swami gave. Hmm. Because it's easy for us to say that, no, I didn't come for what Swami materialized or what Swami gave as gifts. Hmm. Or, you know, if it was education which we all came for, we are still here. So
right.
The period of education is over, but we are still here. The fact is there's something which is so subtle. You know, there are things which are tangible, which Swami gives, and people might get attached to that. But there are even some things which are very subtle, like, as you said, security. And some people feel that, you know, to take to a spiritual path is something superior.
Hmm.
And here was Swami giving you a path free. So, you know, you could hold on to Swami and take to the spiritual path. Again, are we coming and, you know, looking at Swami and wanting Swami, or wanting what Swami is here to give? That's the question which comes again.
It is very important that we are able to, you know, talk through this, discuss this, and get insights from Swami's discourses and what Swami has said, because it's such a fine line that we may often ask, what is the difference in the question? I mean, whether we come for what Swami gives or whether we come for Swami, what is the difference? Both are the same, right? It appears like that on the face of it. But if we see many lives in many aspects, sometimes things that Swami has conferred may not have exactly been palatable.
Very true.
And so that is where I feel the defining moment comes, whether you are wanting Swami or what Swami is giving. Because if you are wanting Swami, then if what Swami gives is very bitter and bad too, you still want Swami because you want Swami.
Exactly. And, you know, the question is, as you said, there may be a very thin line between going after what Swami gives and going after Swami.
Hmm.
But I think the important thing is, as we progress in our journey with Swami, how much do we shift towards wanting only Swami and not what Swami wants to give?
Ah, that's a very nice point, Prem, because as we discussed, almost every one of us has come to Swami seeking the wonders of His hand, you know,
right.
The magic that He does. But in that process, we have apparently been enlightened on what is more important in life. And because of that, we have given up quest for the lesser things. We ourselves feel foolish. Oh, how could I have asked Swami for this? You know, we should ask Swami for this. And maybe a few years from now, we feel, what is this? Why we are asking for this? We should ask for this. There's a kind of gradual evolution. And as you rightly said it, that evolution should be from wanting what Swami gives us to wanting Swami.
Exactly. And in fact, excuse me, what Swami says about the four types of devotees, what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, where He says, Artha, Artharthi, Jignasu and Jnani.
Yes, the one who is sick and seeking health, the one who is financially backward or down and seeking material wealth, the one who is seeking
Spiritual wisdom,
yeah.
Jignasu.
And the Jnani,
who is Krishna says, is one with me. No, which is the ultimate stage of wisdom.
One who is seeking the Lord, being a part of the Lord.
Exactly. But if you see this, you know, sometimes people see this as three stages of devotion.
The four steps.
You know, four steps of devotion. But I feel, you know, you could say four constituents of devotion. And in different stages, the percentage of one is more or less of the other. You know, at times, there are times when we want Swami's help to ward away health problems. And there are times when we want monetary security from Swami. And there are times when we are seekers, true seekers, you know. We have philosophical questions which nag us, and we want that to be removed, and we turn to Swami.
Yes. And just as another thought, I feel that also maybe it may not be that we are at different percentages basing on, you know, our spiritual evolution or something. I think when we are facing a financial crisis, we seek Him as an artharthi. When we are facing a medical problem, we seek Him as an arthi. When we are healthy, fine, and everything is fine, good. If we happen to remember and not forget God, because it is often said that dukh mein sumiran sab kare, sukh mein kare na koi.
Right.
In sorrow, everyone remembers God. In happiness, nobody. But in happiness, if we are able to think of God, I feel that is the time when we start thinking of maybe, you know, seeking out Swami, why is this like this? Why is suffering in the world? Or, you know, all these jignyasu kind.
Right.
Jignyasu kind of questions.
Philosophical questions.
Yeah, and jnani, I don't know. Those jnani moments may be very few and far separated, but they do occur, definitely.
But I think the most important thing in this discussion, I feel, is we'll have to accept that all of us, or at least most of us, 99.99% of us, come to Swami seeking what Swami holds in His hand.
Mm.
Right? I think that's why Swami makes that statement, you know, I've come to give you what you seek, so that one day you will be ready to seek what I'm come to give. Maybe what Swami has come to give is Himself.
Mm.
And the day we seek Him and not what He is here to give, I think maybe that's the final lap of the journey.
I think that's a foregone conclusion that Swami has come to give of Himself. Because as you started off with that beautiful Trayi experience, there also Swami said, but who wants me?
Right.
It was almost as if like I have spent 60 or 70 years of my life. You ask for many things I have given. When will you ask for what I have come to give?
Hmm. And it's especially living with Swami, you know, constantly seeing whether we are after what Swami is giving or after Swami. Maybe that itself may be a process which will help us stick to this. And you know, reminded of a very another moment when Swami kind of got upset with the way people were actually turning away from Swami, even without their own knowledge. Hmm. You know, reminded of event when Swami was traveling to a spot in Kodaikanal. You know, those boys were traveling in the bus behind Swami, and Swami was traveling in his car. At one point, Swami stopped, and as Swami used to do in the earlier days, he got into the bus along with the students. So there was Swami sitting in the on one of the seats,
mm-hmm.
and there were boys all around Swami. Okay,
mm-hmm.
as one of the old students narrated it to us, there were heads on both sides of Swami's shoulders, and there were heads on Swami's laps, and everybody was surrounding Swami, and they were like drinking every word Swami was speaking.
Mm.
Okay, and apparently Swami was traveling to that Pillar Rock. I think you would have be aware of that.
Correct.
It's a tourist location in Kodaikanal.
Tourist spot, huh?
Okay, and at one point in the road where there was a turning in the cliff, you could see the Pillar Rock from that point.
Okay.
Okay, and at that point Swami said, hey, look, Pillar Rock is... And everybody was like peering out of the window and literally their torsos out of the window and craning their necks and seeing. And Swami was telling that, look, that, you know, see the stream there and see that, you know, you can see the cloud floating over the valley and all that. And boys were all enamored. And for one moment, everybody was looking out and nobody was actually with Swami.
Looking at Swami.
And Swami made this very, very painful statement, if I could say so. Swami said, look, all beauty is outside. After all, only God is inside. You know, playing with the words.
Hmm.
That's what we do with our life. You know, we are always looking outside. Someone says, yeah, look outside. All beauty is outside. After all, only God is inside.
Yeah, beautiful.
I think similarly, you know, even in our journey with Swami, it is so easy to get lost with what Swami is here to give. Even the happiness, even that joy of being with Swami, maybe sometimes will take us away from having a focus on Swami.
In the true sense. Well, that is correct, Prem. In another sense, if we see, there are countless examples where the wonders of the hand, people come seeking the wonders of the hand, but then stay back seeking Swami. Means where Swami used to give the example of Mother Yashoda pulling Krishna. She would draw him close when he used to do his mischief, when he is going wayward, you know, in the eyes of a mother, when a child is doing mischief and going wayward. So she would hold out butter in her left hand, hiding the stick behind. So that butter would be a way to pull Krishna. Once she catches him, she would punish him with the stick. Swami often used to say that, I hold out this worldly education that the university gives as that butter to draw you students before I give you the stick of Atma Vidya, which is the true education.
Right.
So I feel, just like Swami uses the butter and stick of secular learning and Atma Vidya, in the same way he uses it to do miracles and show us wonders of the hand, so that once we get close, he can catch hold of us and then give us the stick of, you know, the seeking the truth, that is seeking God and not the wonders.
I think it's very true, and it's not like most people. I think all of us have that. As a, you know,
yes, artha, artharthi, jignyasu, everyone.
We've all, and you know, so like some one devotee was once telling that if you have one problem or if you have something lacking in your life, you know, take that to be a hook on which Swami is going to, you know, kind of chain you and pull you towards Himself. And that's been the case with so many people, you know, they come with small problems, big problems, problems which they feel is so big for them at that point of time, or problems which they feel that nobody else can solve it for them. And when Swami steps in there and fills that lacuna, you know, and gives you that kind of abhaya which nobody else can give, I think after that, your gaze turns towards the hand first of all. And then Swami turns it towards himself.
You know, when you speak this, I am reminded of the example of one Miss Subhashree Karthik.
Okay.
You know, she says that it was somewhere in the 90s, late I think 1995 or something, that they got to know Swami. And how they got to know was, that was a time when she had just got married and her younger brother was still studying. And everything, you know, financially they were dependent on their father.
Right.
There was a loan that had to be cleared, of a loan that had been taken for her marriage. And all in all this circumstance, her father had to undergo a hernia operation. Usually, though it is a painful operation, it is
considered
quite
a minor
one.
Right.
But there was some small mess up that happened, because of which her father got paralyzed.
My God.
It was a paralysis, and therefore he could not go to work. It became a very burdensome thing on the family, financial burden as well as emotional burden. And they were wondering, what is this? How could this get turned into such a big thing? And they did everything possible medically. The doctors, the best solution or the best advice that the doctors gave was doing something which would result in her father getting back to his feet in say about 10 to 15 years time.
10 to 15 years.
That's huge. That's almost one-fifth of a person's life. Right? So, they then started, you know, resorting to visiting temples, conducting homams, and desperately clutching at straws. Anything that comes, anything that's floating by, they were like that, like a sinking man holding, grasping for straws floating. It was at that time that the brother, you know, this Subhashree Karthik's brother, heard about Swami, and he said, you know, there's one Satya Sai Baba like this, apparently he does all these wonder cures and he's a miracle man, let's go to him. And he did not even come to Puttaparthi. They went to Sundaram and got Vibhuti from there. And after that, it was only Vibhuti water. They stopped all medication.
Okay.
And she says that within a week, within 1 week, 7 days, they were all shocked when one day the father said that he wanted to go to the toilet. Just got up and walked to the toilet. They were just dumbfounded. And she says after that...
15 years in ways, 1 week.
7 days and 15 years.
Right.
It's a double in years. It's only 7 days. And she says after that, their whole family, whole generation, everybody reveres Swami as the Master, the Supreme Lord, and they're devoted. So if you see in this case, yes, for a medical reason, they might have come to Swami. But after that, it is a case where you come seeking the wonders of Swami's hand, and then just get lost in Swami and begin to seek Swami.
Brilliant. And you know, another definition of Artharthi, if you see the Sanskrit word, one is one who comes to assuage one's pain. You know, it is easily translated as somebody who has a medical problem. But there might be somebody who has a very deep loss and they come to Swami and for consolation.
Correct. Okay? Any kind of pain.
Even that might draw. And I'm reminded of the story of a very, very sad story, in fact. You know, there's a mother who is widowed in a very young age, and she's bringing up two daughters and a son, I think. And you know, the hope of the whole family lies on the son, who is studying, and he just completes his BCom, and they're all hoping that this guy will, you know, get to a job, and the family can
rely on him.
So he does do well in his BCom, and he passes with first class and all that, and he gets a job. So his mother tells him that now you've got a job, go to Tirupati, you know, Venkateshwara, and offer your salutations to him and then come and take up your job. Okay, so everything is going on fine. And suddenly one day, this mother and the sisters get the news that this boy is drowned in the tank of the temple.
Oh my God.
Okay, and you can imagine for years they've pinned all their hope on this boy, and suddenly comes this news that this boy is no more.
This has been very painful.
Okay, very, very painful. And there is so much of pain, and the need of the hour is consolation. You need somebody who can tell you that I'm there for you and don't worry. Okay, and that is how they finally come to Swami. They come, and it's a very beautiful thing, you know. The first interview with Swami calls them. Swami narrates the whole story himself of how she lost her son.
Hmm.
But Swami gives a very important revelation, and that is the revelation which actually gives them more peace.
Hmm.
Swami says that it was not an accident, and your son was not an ordinary boy. He's a very, very great devotee of Venkateshwara, and this has been his goal of life.
Hmm.
He wanted to give up life in Tirupati.
Oh.
And Swami says that in that tank, he actually saw the feet of Venkateshwara, and he actually walked towards it, and very willfully he drowned. He did not slip and drown or anything like that. And you know, a beautiful thing which happens there is this mother asks Swami that, okay Swami, I accept it. If that is your will, I accept it. But what pains me is I couldn't see him in his last moments. I couldn't have a last look at my son.
Hmm.
So Swami said, okay, I will show it to you. And Swami put out his palm, and on the palm, Swami showed the whole scene of how her son walked into the tank.
Oh, wow.
And this is a story of a family very deeply hurt by a big calamity, and you know, nobody could console them. And they came to Swami, and needless to say, they held on to Swami. And
one beautiful facet in this is Prem. See, we often think that when a mother loses her son, the only way to console the mother would be to get back the son.
Right.
But see here, what a way Swami changed the entire perspective by saying, you know, he didn't drown and die. This is what he has sought. The way you have sought him, see, you have been seeking your son for the last 10-15 years as the hope of your family, as the hope of his life. This is what he has sought for lifetimes. Once you know that, I feel the mother will, of course, there will be that lacunae and pain which Swami will heal in other ways. But whenever she thinks of her son now, she feels gratitude and ennobled that she got a chance to be mother to such a great and glorious boy.
Exactly. And this is not the only case. You know, many cases Swami has kind of, removed that grief completely, which you cannot imagine. So many people with such loss, they come, and when they come to Swami, you know, when it is removed, it just, nobody else can do that for Swami, and that is what actually draws them.
Well, Prem, you know, when I think of, for example, why I came to Swami here, I came to Swami because my father told me Swami was God, and when I look at how actually the first member in the family happened to come to Swami.
Okay, go to the roots.
Yeah, okay. It is my father's eldest brother,
mm-hmm.
who is now in his 80s. He actually had a transfer. He was staying in Bangalore.
Okay.
He is staying in Bangalore anyway. He in Bangalore when he was working with Tomco, Tata's company. He was working there, and he got a transfer to Bombay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since the ancestral home was in Bangalore, he did not want to go to Bombay. And he was desperate to stay back, so he was trying everything possible in the administrative manner, but nothing seemed to be working out. Then one night he had a dream. You know, in Bangalore and Karnataka especially, you have this concept of Haridasa. It's there mm-hmm. in South India also. A person walks along with a decked bull,
okay.
and he plays a musical instrument, and you know, it's a
kind
way
of soothsaying. Goes
and door. He keeps predicting some things, goes door to door, and you know, people just support him by giving him some food, money and all that.
Right.
So in his dream, he sees one Haridasa walking like this and, you know, just touching him, tapping him on his head and blessing him.
Mm-hmm.
So he woke up in the morning and felt, whatever it may be, it's a good omen, you know, a nice person like this coming and blessing me. A few days later, as he's going on a scooter, he suddenly, in one temple near Seshadripuram in Bangalore, he sees there's a gathering of about 40-50 people and somebody's giving a talk. Passing by the road, curiously, he looks. To his utter shock and amazement, the Haridasa who came in his dream
mm-hmm.
is standing there and delivering a talk. He goes and makes...
Same person.
Okay, he says that same bushy hair, you know, that is... The suspense is revealed now, okay.
Oh.
yes. That Haridasa was Swami in his dream. And so he goes and goes to the crowd there and asks who... You know, who is this person who was giving a talk?
Okay.
And they tell him that he is Satya Sai Baba, he is a miracle worker, he does wonderful things. He is Shirdi Baba's avatar and all the basic intros. And they say he is in Puttaparthi, which is about 9 hours journey from here.
Okay.
Those days it was 9 hours from Bangalore. So you know what my uncle thinks? He thinks, if this person is a miracle worker, he can somehow cancel my transfer.
Cancel my transfer.
You know? It's almost like how Swami says, you go to a Kalpa Vriksha, wish fulfilling tree and ask for coffee powder. Like that, he thought, you know, I'll ask if he can. So he took my father along with him and he travelled all the way to Puttaparthi, and he was all planning as to how he should explain the problem to Swami, you know. This he was a young lad, so he thought if he asks me, it was like, he was more like a friend's age for him.
Okay.
2-3 years.
How to open the concept.
So you see, I actually work in such and such a company. And
he knows about transfers.
Yeah, transfer. And, my ancestral home is here. He had made his whole plan.
Right.
He was called for an interview. And when he went into the interview room, when Swami called him to speak, Swami was speaking to each individual separately. When he called him in, Swami said, "Let me assure you that you will not be leaving Bangalore. You will not be going to Bangalore. You will not be going to Bombay. Okay? Now ask what you want to ask." My uncle was just tongue-tied. He just thought, that's it. I can just walk out now. That's all it is. But with that one statement, Swami walked into not only his heart, but into the hearts of the whole family. And today, if I see every one of us, it was in that manner that Swami chose him as an instrument to walk into our lives. But today when I look at it, so foolish. Imagine he came to Swami seeking what? A cancellation of a transfer. But well, he sought that wonder of his hand. But finally, it has resulted in a family holding on to Swami. So I feel that seeking wonder seeking the wonders of Swami's hand is not a crime as such. But it automatically leads to a kind of evolution where you stop seeking what he is giving and start seeking him.
And, talking of people who are seeking, there are a few who come seeking spiritual wisdom too.
Hmm.
Seeking things like, monetary help or related to health is quite common, because that's a very common thing in human life. And everybody faces them, and if somebody is there who can solve that problem, we would very well go and seek that from them. But there are people who came to Swami as spiritual seekers, who wanted to advance themselves in the spiritual journey too. And I think one of them is our lecturer. We all know him very well, Bhagya sir.
Yeah, Professor H.J. Bhagya.
Right, he's
from the Department of Management
Studies. Hmm. He would often tell this, you heard it from him many, many times.
Yeah, that is interesting. You should narrate it. Yes.
He came to Swami. He was a devotee. I don't know how exactly he was drawn to Swami, the initial story. Maybe one day we will get it from him. But he came to Swami. He was working in the Gulf. And the reason why he actually relocated and came to Puttaparthi or came to India as such was that he wanted to concentrate on his spiritual life.
Pursue spirituality.
Hmm. So that's why he came here, and he comes to Puttaparthi. Swami appoints him as a lecturer. And then with time he realizes that this assignment which Swami has given him is taking so much of his time that he's not able to concentrate. He's almost leading the same life he was leading in the Gulf.
Elsewhere, huh?
So he said, "I've come here and this is the reason why I've come to Swami. I want to concentrate, I want to meditate, I want to,
It's a true jignasu.
Yeah, true jignasu." So he's saying, and these fellows, and I'm sure students must have been very naughty for him to let him concentrate on his spiritual life. So he desired that, "I have to ask Swami and maybe go to the Himalayas or something and pursue my spirituality seriously."
Mm.
So at one occasion he got up and told Swami that, "Swami, this is my situation, and do something. I don't think I can continue teaching like this because it's not giving me the joy I came for."
Mm.
And what Swami told him was really stunning.
Mm.
Swami said, "If you listen to me and teach in this college the way I'm asking you to, okay, I will give you whatever knowledge you are seeking. But if you want to seek it yourself, and if you, run away from the responsibility I am giving you, take my word, for the next 1,000 births, I will make sure that you don't get it."
I remember, the actual statement that he said, Bhagya sir said that Swami told him, if you separate this as spiritual work and this as non-spiritual work, in 1,000 births, I will not give you liberation. I will not give you what you are seeking. And Bhagya sir said, the first thought that came into his head was, "Oh my God, to get a human birth, we have to pass through 84 lakh species. And so 84 lakh species into 1,000 is, my God, it goes into crores." And, mark Swami's words. He did not say that after 1,000 births you will not get. He said, after 1,000 births, I will not give.
That's the...
So the granting authority is here. And that made him realize, oh my God, what is it? So I shall seek Swami. And when I seek Swami, if Swami tells me to teach statistics in the MBA department, so be it. And that is how a Jignyasu too, who came to Swami seeking only spiritual pursuits, was taught that whatever was his pursuit is itself spiritual.
In fact, another devotee I'm reminded of is, I think you would have read the book, Anandadai, Sri Satyasai Anandadai.
Mm.
She writes about her mother. Mm. And she also is a very, very spiritually and very devout woman.
Mm.
And who came to Swami with the idea that here is an ashram and here is Swami.
Mm.
He is definitely a spiritual giant. So I can stay in his ashram, I can pursue my, spiritual sadhana or whatever.
Mm.
And she came here, and what Swami does, Swami says, okay, sweep the ashram and cook for the devotees,
mm.
and wash the portico. And at a point in time, she found, what is this, Swami? I thought you were going to give me a mantra, and I thought you were going to ask me to go into the caves and do some meditation, and this is what, you're making me do the same thing which I've been doing all my life.
Mm.
Okay, and she used to always keep telling herself, why is Swami not giving me this? Why is not Swami giving this? And I think she narrates in that book how some sadhakas come from Ramanashram.
Hmm.
When Ramana Maharshi is about to leave his body, he sends few of his disciples to Swami. That's what she narrates in that book.
Okay.
And she meets them, and Swami gives her the duty of taking care of them and their needs and all that. So she's so interested, because here are people who are real sadhakas, who are coming from a real ashram, not like the one that she's staying in, where, she kind of, she feels that she's disillusioned with what she's going through.
Hmm.
So she asks them, what do you do in Ramanashram? And they go about telling the whole schedule. We wake up at 3 o'clock and we do this and we do that. We meditate for so many hours together and, we do upavasa and all that. So she's so fascinated by it. So at one point, I think, I don't know exactly how it happens. It's a long time since I've read that book. Where Swami calls these people and asks them, what did your guru tell you when he asked you to come here? So they went on to say that they were at a point in time in their sadhana that they needed a guide, and their guru was, apparently it was time for him to depart. So he told them that you go to Puttaparthi and stay there with Swami, and he will take care of you. And Swami asked them, what did he ask you to do here? Okay. And they said, very strange. He said, just go to Puttaparthi, just do bhajans and sit there. And this lady who heard this was so surprised, because it actually did not matter of, what you thought of, your concept of spirituality actually did not matter at all. Swami was the one who was giving it. And
issuing authority.
Yeah, she realized that she was actually seeking what she wanted from Swami's hand, not what Swami was here to give.
You take me back into my own, my own memories, Prem, because as I said, even I tried, sometime thinking of, I think when we discussed this in some satsang, where I was thinking of doing something because I felt my life is stagnating here. Means I felt I also want to pursue spirituality, and what is this? Daily I go chant, sing bhajans, chant Veda, come here, study, and it's, what is so special? I don't seem to be moving. It seems to be so stagnant. And yes, at the end of it, it resulted with Swami, in my dream, telling me that all you need to do is have darshan. That's enough. Rest I'll take care. And then I realized that, here is what you are seeking. This is the ultimate. Okay, so why do you listen to what somebody else is telling? It's not appropriate, but like right from the horse's mouth you are getting it. Swami is directly telling you, you just do this. If Swami says, you sell radishes in front of Mandir, that's enough, I'll take care. That's all that matters. You sell radishes and it's taken care. So I feel that also, sometimes become our concept of sadhana itself becomes an hindrance in our sadhana, and demolishing that concept itself becomes a sadhana.
Very true, because, as one of the spiritual writers puts it, your ego is always trying to dominate you.
Mm.
Okay, and in the world, if you're in worldly life, you want authority, you want to have a degree, you want to have a social, stature that people look up to you. So when you turn to spirituality, the ego will find other ways of dominating you.
Mm.
So, it wants you to feel that, now see, you're a spiritual man. You're taken to the spiritual path. You're special. You're different from the others. you're better than the rest. That kind of feeling. And that is when, you want people to see you and feel that, see, how much sadhana does he do? How many things he does? How many hours of meditation he does?
Mm.
And here Swami will be striking at the root of that.
Mm.
Swami will be telling a person who wants to do seva, don't do seva. Swami will be telling a person who wants to do japam, Swami will tell, don't do japam. Because, it eventually comes to that, breaking that idea which you have created and seeking what Swami is here to give.
Prem, though this is a slightly side point, I definitely wish to bring it up here, because as we discuss, we realize that when viewed in a proper perspective, everything makes so much sense. And therefore, I feel it is wrong to say that, you know, in an interview, Swami told him that you need not do japa.
Right.
So I will not do. Because it is such a personalized prescription. To some, Swami has said, in our own studio, my colleague, Swami told him that, I have given you work, why are you neglecting your work? Don't come even for darshan, let me not see you here, go and work. That was his redemption. For me, I was told, have darshan. So many times, in middle of my work, when I hear the siren, Swami's car is going, Swami's going somewhere, I just drop everything and go. But my colleague would not. Now, it would be wrong for me to judge my colleague, or wrong for my colleague to judge me. In the same way, I feel, in this spiritual path, two things that are absolutely necessary is, one is absolute sincerity and honesty. Like, because if we try to cheat anybody, we are cheating ourselves. Let us realize what is it that Swami is telling us, because Swami has promised, if you need me, you deserve me, and whoever seeks, I will speak to them. So when we seek Swami, Swami will speak, Swami will give us guidance. We should only be honest and have the courage to implement that. And second thing is, when we are implementing something that Swami has told us, let us also know that in the same way others are implementing what Swami has told them. I am no one to question what they are doing is right or wrong, just as they are nobody to question what I am doing is right or wrong. But all this comes under the disclaimer that you are doing it honestly from the bottom of your heart. Others are taken care of. Why bother?
Very true. I mean, though it's a point which is
slightly off
our discussion, it's a very important point, because, you know, somewhere I always feel, from what Swami has said and what we have observed in the ashram, you know, it's so necessary to avoid being judgmental. Because it's always better to judge somebody as good and be wrong than to judge somebody as bad.
Forget somebody
and then be wrong.
Forget somebody else. You know, we often get into judging Swami.
Right.
We say that in 1965, on 31st March, Swami, I don't know, I'm just saying that, but on that day, Swami said like this. But on this discourse, Swami said like this. In this, I mean, as if like how you deal with an academic work. That day's audience was different. That day there was somebody who needed to hear something. When Swami is speaking, he is dealing with children from the kindergarten to students from the postgraduate. And not only physically, but even on a spiritual level, there are kindergarten people sitting there and postgraduate students sitting there. Imagine if you are a teacher addressing a class like this, how difficult it would be for you to teach. So you have to mix up things and make sense for the postgraduate person as well as the kindergarten child. Instead of doing intellectual academic analysis, let us just follow our heart. Let us just follow our heart, and whatever we get inspired when we see Swami, when we read his discourse, when we hear it, let us know that point which strikes our heart and inspires us is Swami's message for us. Because if you have noticed, not the same sentence strikes everybody and inspires everybody. Different things in a discourse inspire different people. So what inspires us is for us. Let us hold on to that and follow it, rather than, you know, going to that thing of getting judgmental, saying Swami said that at this time, Swami said this at this time, and they are opposites. How can that be?
The other way of looking at it, you know, what I'm tending towards seeing is, at one point Swami is saying, do japam and you will get it. And the other point Swami is saying, don't do japam. To some he is saying, do seva. To some he is saying, don't do seva. Of course, there are some things which are standard. Namasmarana is something which Swami prescribes to everybody. But what I'm trying to say is, there are stages when Swami says you do this, and to somebody else Swami says you don't do. It just comes to, you know, brings me to the understanding that it doesn't matter what you do. What matters is, do what Swami is telling you to do.
Because
it may not be what Swami is telling. Just do what Swami is telling you to do.
Because that shows that you are seeking Swami.
Right.
When you seek Swami, what makes Swami happy makes you happy.
Right. And it is not in what you do. What you do is not going to get you what you seek. Actually, it is just that obedience. You know, the most important thing in a guru-sishya relationship, or that of a devotee and God, is just that obedience. It is not what you do in obedience.
Correct.
It's just obedience.
You know, Prem, when we started this topic, we said that we often seek what Swami gives us. Even these things, you know, thinking that Namasmarana is a way to reach Swami, So Swami will encourage me on the path of Namasmarana because he has come to lead me to God. Swami will encourage me on the path of Seva. These are also things that we seek of him.
Exactly.
And when he doesn't fit to that, you think, how can this be? What is happening? But if we truly seek Swami, whatever makes Swami happy, makes us happy. It is as simple as that. You know, I am reminded of the story of the Gopikas. You know, it's a famous, Swami has narrated so many times in his discourses. Krishna starts, you know, in order to show the devotion and the maturity that the Gopikas have, because everybody, you know, is jealous, telling, what is so special about Gopikas? Why is Krishna having so much love towards the Gopikas? So one day Krishna has a severe headache. A severe headache, and all the divine physicians and everybody are called. Nobody's treatment seems to have any effect on Lord Krishna. And then Krishna says, there's only one medicine for this. Who can get it for me? So everybody says, what is it, O Lord? Tell us. We will get it. And Krishna says, I have to apply on my forehead the dust from the feet of a devotee. Which devotee is ready to give the dust of his or her feet for me to apply on my forehead? The minute this is said, you know how it is considered that, you know, you place your foot on the Lord's photograph, it is considered like a sin.
Right.
So every devotee shudders, thinking, what is the kind of sin I will get by applying the dust of my feet onto the Lord's forehead? Oh my God, I am not ready to do this. But when Krishna tells, go and ask the Gopikas, the minute sage Narada tells this to the Gopikas, instantly they, you know, raise their feet, shake off the dust, put it and give it and say, if this is going to heal Lord Krishna, please take this to him at the earliest. They did not bother. If sin accrues of it, so what? For them what mattered was, what Krishna wants is what we want. That kind where we are ready to even go against our own mindsets. You know, in any normal instance, nobody will think of putting a foot on the Lord's image. But what if Swami tells, go and kick that idol? Are we ready? Then it is that we are, I know I am giving an extreme example, but then it is that we are truly seeking Swami. Because Swami indeed tells that, you know. He tells us, we build an idol, an image of ourselves, and he tells us, are you ready to kick that? We are not ready to kick that. Swami, we worship this image, you too should worship it. We are so attached to that. So, these are the things that come, I feel, in our way of seeking Swami, vis-a-vis seeking what he is ready to give us.
Very true, Arvind. You know, from what you have said, you know, before we move ahead, what we've discussed so far, thing is, we all seek what Swami has come to give.
Hmm.
And it's not a bad thing, because the good thing which has happened with us is, we have sought it from Swami.
Hmm.
We could have sought it from anywhere, and the blessings which Swami has given us is, we have turned to Swami for it. You know, free education, you could have sought it anywhere.
Correct.
Somebody was telling, so many European countries offer free education. It's like we turned to Swami for it, and at that moment, Swami drew us through that. Or for that matter, health. You know, like one lecturer of mine was telling, there are people in Kashi who can do all kinds of miracles.
Hmm.
Okay, and as Ramakrishna Varma used to say, that siddhis are a distraction. So many of these people may be caught up in that distraction of having powers. But we have turned to Swami, for some reason Swami has drawn us to him, instead of seeking from anybody else. Even the miracles we have sought it from Swami. And I think that process of seeking itself will actually lead us to seek him. We will come to that point maybe after a short break. We have had close to 45 minutes of discussion. We will take a short break here, dear listeners. We are going to play for you a beautiful song. And
yes, and that song exactly echoes what we have all been discussing. That is, we come, O Lord, to seek your face and not the wonders of your hand. Meaning, we seek you, O Lord, and not what your hand is capable of giving us.
Given us so much, and feed us. you for all you've done for us. We come to praise your name, King of kings and Lord of lords. We come to give you praise. You are the one that we adore. Oh Lord, tend the heart with fire, fill us with desire for your good, for your presence in our lives. Oh, you made a way because of your great love, and our hearts are filled with praise for all that you have done. There is none like you, so faithful and so true. We just want to thank you for all you brought us through. We come to praise your name, King of kings and Lord of lords. We come to give you praise. You are the one that we adore. Oh Lord, tend the heart with fire, fill us with desire for your good, for your presence in our
Welcome back, dear listeners. And that song, I think, is a Christmas carol song, Arvind.
Yes.
Which was sung by Swami's students during one of the Christmas carols.
I think this was 2007.
Right. And as the song echoed those feelings, I hope one day we could stand in front of Swami and say it with all our hearts, saying that we have not come to seek the wonders of your hand, we have come to seek your grace. Coming back to the discussion, Arvind, we left out with a point saying, you know, the process of seeking anything from Swami's hand will eventually lead us to seeking Swami himself.
Mm.
And I think the most famous story which could come up in our mind is the story of Dhruva, right?
Yeah,
and it's a very beautiful story. And in fact, you know, if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, I think the most famous modern version of Srimad Bhagavatam is Kamala Subramanyam's Srimad Bhagavatam.
If you very beautiful. It,
very beautiful, and the description she gives in different stages and in different episodes is very beautiful.
She has the ability to transport you. So rather than a reader, you become a participant and the whole scene seems to be happening all around you.
Right.
Very wonderful.
And perfect selection of words in many occasions. Talking of the story of Dhruva, you know, the story goes that Dhruva is the son of...
He's the second son of King Uttanapada.
Uttanapada. And Uttanapada has two wives. One
correct.
Is
Suruchi and
Suruchi
Suniti.
And Suniti. And he is the son of Suniti.
Yes, the elder queen, but who has been dominated by the younger queen Suruchi.
Right.
And therefore, Suruchi's son, always gets to sit on...
the lap of the father. And
little Dhruva doesn't.
Right, on one occasion, Dhruva is kind of sent away by the stepmother, saying that you don't have a place in your father's lap. And at that point, she says something that, you know, if you want to come and sit on your father's lap,
pray to Lord Narayana and
you have to be born in my womb.
Correct.
To have the, you know, place in your father's lap.
Mm.
So he goes crying to his mother, and mother is a very, very pious woman, and she says that the only refuge we have is Lord Narayana.
Now imagine, Prem, what glorious virtues. No wonder that Swami keeps speaking about Dhruva, his mother, you know. Imagine your son is coming to you and telling you, mother, I can sit on father's lap only if I am born of my stepmother. And she says, ask Narayana, he will fulfill. And the mother's response, so mature and so wise, she says, yes, my child, there is nothing that Lord Narayana cannot grant. Definitely go, he is our only refuge, and seek from him. Wow, where do we see that? I mean, she doesn't pick up cudgels and go and fight with her.
Right. And, you know, imagine, Dhruva is a five-year-old boy.
Hmm.
And he says that, right, if that is the only way, I'll go and seek it from Narayana. And so he says, how do I seek it from Narayana? And the mother tells him, tapas.
Hmm.
Only through tapas you can draw
penance.
The rod. Only through penance. So this little five-year-old boy sets out to the forest to do penance and receive this boon from Lord Narayana. And he goes, and the story goes that, you know, he meets Narada on the way.
Sage Narada.
Sage Narada on the way, and Sage Narada is surprised to see a five-year-old prince coming to the forest. And he
that
says,
is fully populated with wild beasts.
Right, and he says, he tries to kind of dissuade him, saying that, you know, this is not a place for you.
Mm.
Go back to your play school.
Mm.
And there are scorpions here, there are wild animals here, and there are snakes here. And he says, no, I want to come. I've come here to seek from Narayana. So Narada asks him, how are you going to pray?
Mm.
What are you going to pray to him as? He says, I don't know.
Mm.
I've come here. And then the story goes that Narada actually initiates him into the
Ashtakshari
mantra.
Om Namo Narayanaya. No, I'm sorry. He doesn't. He initiates him into Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vasudevaya, right. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Correct.
And young Dhruva is sitting there in the Bhagavatam. It's so beautifully narrated. He takes 5 months of penance.
Hmm.
And each month, progressively, he gives up, you know, the first month,
he gives up
food. And the second month, he subsists
on
dry leaves. Berries. And the third month, it's only on dry leaves. The fourth month, is only on water. And the fifth month, is only on air.
And after that, in the sixth month, he stops even breathing.
Right.
Because of which the heavens begin to choke.
Exactly. And that is when Narayana appears in front of him. And that again, that scene is very beautifully portrayed in Kamala Subramanyam's Srimad Bhagavatam. She says that here is this five-year-old boy, you know. Five-year-old, I think you must be in first standard, second standard, if you're a five-year-old now.
First
and
grade.
The Lord is appearing in front of you, you know, the Shankh Chakra and
the discus mace.
The six arms and so much of glory in that form. So this little boy, he's so enamored by that vision, but he's not able to express it.
Hmm.
He doesn't have words to express it. And the story goes that Vishnu places that Shankhu, the conch, on the cheek of young Dhruva.
Hmm.
And thereby transfer some knowledge into him so that he can praise the Lord who has manifested in front of him.
Yeah, it is traditional practice that in front of the Lord you sing the stutis of the Lord,
right.
The praises in him, hymns in praise of the Lord.
And of course, we see it as a protocol now, but I think then it was like if the Lord appeared in front of you,
spontaneous outburst.
You cannot help but spontaneously go and praise him.
Correct.
And that's what Dhruva wanted to do, but he didn't have the scholarship to do that. But here was Lord Vishnu giving him the scholarship, so that, okay, now sing to your heart's content.
Hmm.
And you know, he sings out in praise and he describes the form which is standing in front of him, and finally Vishnu says, okay, dear child, what do you want? What did you seek me for? And he says, Lord, I wanted you only. I wanted nothing but you. I want only your grace. I want to always be at your feet. That's all I want. And I think there's another interesting dialogue which
I was waiting.
I think Swami used to say that, right?
Yeah,
I think you should share that.
Because this is something that I didn't find in any, you know, in any of the
any
traditional narrations of Dhruva's story. Swami says that when Lord Vishnu asked Dhruva, what is it that you want? When Narayana asked Dhruva, what is it you want? Dhruva says, Lord, in all these seven worlds, you knew where exactly I was and you have come to me. Don't you know what is there in my mind? Why do you ask? You know what is it that I seek. And Lord Narayana tells him that, see, and Swami tells this so beautifully. Swami says, I mean, this is what Swami said that Lord Narayana said.
Okay.
And it was almost like an autobiographical account that, you know, I told him at that time, none of these people have recorded it.
Mm.
It was something like that. So Swami said, see, manas ekam, vachas ekam, karmanyekam, mahatmanam. Which means, if you have unity in your thought, word and deed, you become a great person. And so Swami said that Vishnu tells Dhruva, see Dhruva, you have had manas ekam, you have had a thought in your head. Karmanyekam you have done, means you have done an act appropriate to that, that is seeking me.
Done penance.
Yes. So there has been unity in your thought and deed. Say it in the word and win that jackpot of unity in thought, word and deed and become a Mahatmana. So there also the Lord, you know, made him a Mahatma by making him state that my desire is to be one with you. Because that was his thought, that was the word and that was the deed. And that is an interesting story that Swami tells. But the highlight of the whole thing is, Dhruva set out so that he can win God's grace to sit on the lap of his father. That was his objective, sole objective. But once the Lord appeared before him, the process of seeking the Lord itself made him transform his desire into seeking only the Lord. He started by seeking what the Lord is capable of giving. And then ended up seeking the Lord himself, telling nothing else I want. And in fact, if we go to the Bhagavatam, the story continues by saying that Lord Narayana tells him that yes, your heart seeks to be one with me and that is granted. Now having granted that, you know, I'm so happy with you. Now go, you will rule your kingdom for thousands of years and then you will stay immortal as the Dhruva Nakshatra. In India, you know, the pole star is called as the Dhruva Nakshatra.
Right.
And it is believed that the pole star is known to be a guide for all sailors. But in Bharat, it is believed that the Dhruva Nakshatra is a guiding star not only in your physical journeys, but even in the spiritual journeys, that is always prodding you on to seek the Lord and the Lord alone.
Right. And you know, another contemporary example I'm reminded of is one of our staff in a university. You know, he was telling me this very interesting thing. He finished his graduation and he was just looking out for a job. And he found that here was a university which has just come up and they're looking for staff in their administrative block. So he just applied and he got in. Okay? So he never came to Swami as a devotee. And in fact, you know, when he came, he says in the interview, they asked him, do you know Sundaram? Because he's from Chennai.
Okay.
He said, who is that? They were referring to Sundaram.
The center,
Swami's residence in Chennai. But he was saying, who is that? So that was how out of touch he was. You know, he didn't know anything about Swami. And that's how he came. And he narrates, you know, one of the first few weeks when he's in, after he's joined, he turns to his side and he sees next to him, the senior politician in India, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, sitting. Okay, just beside him, in the portico. And the interesting thing was, just a month before he had joined the university, he had actually taken part in a rally which Atal Bihari Vajpayee was supposed to address.
Okay.
So he was part of a millions of youth who had gone to, you know, support and listen to Atal Bihari Vajpayee. And here he's sitting in the portico and just beside him, Mr. Vajpayee is sitting. So he said, you know, at that moment, you know, the way how Swami inspires us to think, he says, look at this Swami. I mean, we went to a rally to see this man. And when I sought Swami, this man is sitting next to me. So he says, how much more Swami can give than what you seek? And you know, I think that is what happens when we seek from Swami. Like, you know, when we go to him with a problem which we have not found solution elsewhere, and Swami can solve it, and you are taken by awe. Oh, Swami
you realize his magnificence, his grandeur, his glory, his power, and then you feel so small asking for your tribute.
Right, and next time when Swami asks, what do you want?
I think you
wouldn't dare to ask for anything else because you know that Swami can give you so much, and you will be like, you know, the story that you told the last week, the child who is putting his little hand into the pot of the jar of chocolates.
I'm reminded of another child of God like this, Prem. Naren, who later became Swami Vivekananda.
Right.
You know, he faced a lot of financial troubles in his life. And he felt he had a family to support.
I think his father passed away when he was in college.
Correct. Right. And so the financial support of his family collapses. And here he is a young man, sturdy body, able mind, and having all the potential, but spending all his life in quest of God under a guru whom half the place considered as a madman. Okay, today we revere and respect Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, but during his times, never. It's almost as if everybody learns the value after something is gone. I mean, thank God, you know, dear listeners, we are also grateful that we got a chance to, you know, be with Swami and when he was physically in our midst. But anyway, coming back to this, he goes to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa Vivekananda Naren and tells, Guru, what is this? You know, you go tell your mother, you know, because Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to have long conversations with Mother Kali, Mother Kali.
That's what draws him to Ramakrishna in the first place.
Yes, because he says...
There was one person who could authoritatively say that, yes, I've seen God.
I've seen God and I see God as I see you. So he says, next time you see your mother, you tell her. You tell her that, you know, I'm struggling like this. Let her help me out. And then Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says, Naren, why are you wanting an intermediary? He opens the temple door and he says, go. Go ask the mother what you want. Naren is determined. He says, you're sure she will give? He says, Naren, whatever you ask, she will give. You go. He goes to the temple. He comes out. He's looking a little bit crestfallen and Ramakrishna Paramahamsa asks him, what happened? He says, Guru, when I went there, I asked for faith and devotion. He says, Naren, where are you a fool? Go ask again. You know, in the typical Ramakrishna that style, you go, Naren, you go ask mother for...
She will never say no. You go and ask
her. Never. Her love is very loud. Great. Again, Naren goes and, you know, if you see Naren's experience, when he stands before the idol and when he stands before the mother, he realizes what the mother is. He's able to perceive her and then he feels so petty asking for wealth. He again falls on his knees, tears flow down profusely from his cheeks. And he says, Mother, give me devotion. Mother, give me steadfast faith. Mother, give me everlasting service at your lotus feet. And he comes out and he tells to his Guru, Guru, you know, whenever I go in front of the mother, I can't ask for anything else but love, faith and devotion. And then Ramakrishna Paramahamsa tells him, that is mother's love. That is mother's love, that she ensures that you ask for the most wonderful gifts that she can give you, rather than ask for cheap tinsel and trash. Indeed, blessed are you, Naren. And you know, that is the beginning. That is the beginning of the transformation of Naren to Swami Vivekananda. And we know what a roaring lion he is. Recently, we celebrated his 150th birth anniversary. And even today, he's such a source of inspiration, which I am sure earning 1 lakh gold coins that day from mother would not have made him. It is what the mother bestowed on him that has made him what he is today.
We would have lost to Vivekananda.
Exactly.
Had he asked for the wrong thing on that day. You know, when I look at this discussion, you know, when I look at this question of do we seek Swami or do we seek the protection that Swami gives, you know, I'm pushed to visualize it this way. You know,
okay.
If you think, in all sense, you know, what we finally come to Swami for is happiness or
correct.
Peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that at one point, a solution to a health problem is what will give us happiness. Mm-hmm. At one point, money is what will give us happiness in that
mm-hmm.
situation.
Mm-hmm.
So every time what we think will give us peace and happiness is what we come for Swami. And
I think that's
right.
Fair. Ultimately, what we want is
exactly.
happiness.
Exactly. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you can picturize happiness or peace as one bubble inside you,
very easy, Prem, because it seems so flimily like a bubble.
So,
anytime it will pop and you have lost your happiness.
Right. And let us say that you will be most happy if the bubble is a perfect spherical, figure.
Okay.
It should be perfectly spherical. There should be no...
Bubble is sphere, right? Always.
Yeah. The problem is, this bubble is attached to so many strings. So one string is your health, one string is your wealth, one string is your relationship, your egos. Okay, and to keep this bubble in that perfect figure, all these should be in perfect tension, in perfect balance. Okay, sometimes something pulls more, so you want to pull it back and make sure that, you know, the bubble doesn't lose its shape. So all the while in life, now we are actually pulling at all these strings and trying to make that bubble stay intact.
Prem, actually, you know, this is the truth in life. We are trying to keep our happiness bubble by trying to get perfect tension.
Exactly. Well put. And you know, what happens with us in life is we have two hands, and you can imagine that even in the inner realm, at a point we're not able to manage this by ourselves. So we come to Swami or we come to any spiritual master thinking that he will help us keep this bubble intact by helping to keep the tension intact in all these strings. So I'm not able to pull this health string to keep this thing intact. So God, just help me pull this string.
Huh?
Or I'm not able to hold on to this thing. You know, my relationships are fine. My money I've taken care of. But only this health is actually pulling me. So you come to God. So all the while you're trying to come to God to make sure that He keeps this bubble of peace and, you know, happiness intact by managing these strings.
Correct.
But actually what Swami does for us is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
What Swami does is He actually snaps all these strings. And Swami is trying to tell us that left alone, this bubble will be in its shape. It's just that you're attaching it to all these strings. And though we come to Swami to handle these strings, Swami silently what He does is He does handle it for a while. And slowly without our knowledge or with our knowledge, He starts snapping these strings.
Wow.
So that you know whether the string is pulling you or not pulling you, that will not affect your inner happiness.
Beautiful, beautiful visualization and beautiful picture, Prem. And that actually explains so many things where apparently Swami is depriving you of something. You know, when you think He cuts off the strings, it's like you falsely think that a part of you is getting lost. But in order to retain your original identity as Prema Swarupalara or Ananda Swarupalara, an embodiment of joy, He's actually snapping away the strings. I think that is a very beautiful analogy, Prem. And this reminds me, you know, of all the strings. Maybe we can consider it like the creation, you know, the creation that has come out from the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So once we are with the Lord, we need not worry about actually the creation. And this was Swami's message, even during that, you know, epoch making, we have all heard of it, the summer course in Ooty in 1976, I think that was.
Right. The first summer course to be held
in Ooty.
In Ooty.
That has become epochal because Swami materialized a medallion.
Right.
On which was embossed the map of India.
Right.
Where 18 points had been marked out as centers, which will be coming Sai centers. And Swami materialized this and He said that, see, in this map, you can see all the points where Sai centers will be coming up. You know, I will not take away the beauty of that discourse. We will hear Swami speaking that. But the point I want to make here is, when He passed around that medallion for people to see, because He said that the whole future is written here. Anybody wants to read can read it. But it was written in such fine lettering that somebody had to borrow somebody's glasses, you know, which was like a...
Yeah.
What we call soda glasses.
Right. Somebody was wearing very thick glasses on that
thick
day.
Thick focal length glasses.
Right.
Due to very acute short-sightedness or acute far-sightedness. So such a lens was borrowed and somebody tried to see, and all that he could, that boy could make out was that it is indeed in Sanskrit.
Right.
That's all. Nothing else. So they were all a little disappointed, you know. Here is something that Swami is giving and none of us is able to read it. Immediately, you know, Swami says, but why are you all getting worried and fretting? The creator of that medallion is with you. Why do you worry about the creation? And that, you know, it, when you listen to that, it hits you so strongly. Because all said and done, the creation is beautiful, magnificent. But when you are with the creator, who is capable of doing this at will, why hanker after the creation?
And I think, Arvind, we should listen to that script, that particular clip, when Swami is giving His discourse. And dear listeners, this clip was recorded. I don't think even Swami had a mic when He spoke this, because it was in a very close group. Only the students of the summer course were there, and Swami made
it. We are grateful to the person who recorded it,
right?
Because it not only throws light upon just the topic that we are discussing today, it's magnificent, and no summary can do justice to it. The best way to do justice to it is to hear it in its pristine glory.
Right. So, dear listeners, we'll just play that clip for you now.
I am going to do in future for this country, India, and for the rest of the world will now be shown to you on what I am going to materialize. What I have materialized contains the map of India and contains all the 18 different components of India. And on each component is shown where the memorial stupas, which would represent the work done by me, or the work that is going to be done in each of the 18 states of India, is being written and is available in pictorial form on this medallion which I have just now materialized. And on the medallion is inscribed in Sanskrit verse the work and the future tasks which I am going to fulfill.
ఇది ఏ ఏ స్టేట్ లోపల ఎక్కడెక్కడ కాలేజీలు అవుతుంది, గన్ సంస్థ చూపిన ఎక్కడ వస్తుంది, ఇన్సెక్యూరిటీ స్టేట్ లోపల కూడా ఎక్కడెక్కడ జరుగుతుంది. ఇది ఇంకా 46 సంవత్సరం వరకు కూడా ఈ దేహం ఉంటుంది. ఈ 46 సంవత్సరం లోపల కూడా ఈ భారతదేశంలో జరపవలసినవన్నీ దీంట్లో ఇప్పుడే ముందుగా రాసింది.
దిస్ బాడీ ఇన్ విచ్ ఐ హావ్ కమ్ ఈస్ గోయింగ్ టు బి ప్రజెంట్ ఫర్ అనదర్ 46 ఇయర్స్ ఫ్రమ్ నౌ ఆన్వర్డ్స్. ఇన్ దోస్ 46 ఇయర్స్ whatever dharma sthapana, whatever work will be done by me in each one of the states and in the country itself, and what kind of dharma sthapana, what kind of colleges, what kind of education will be established is all written now for the next 46 years. The program is now written on the medallion that has been materialized.
Inte kaadu ఈ యొక్క ఒక్కొక్క రాష్ట్రం లోపల ఒక్కొక్కరు భవిష్యత్తు లోపల ఏ ఏ పిల్లవాడిని ఎక్కడెక్కడ స్థాపించుతామనేటువంటిది కూడా దీంట్లో ఉంటుండాలి.
నాట్ ఓన్లీ దిస్ విచ్ బాయ్ విల్ బి ఎంట్రస్టెడ్ ది టాస్క్ ఇన్ విచ్ ఆఫ్ ది 18 స్టేట్స్ ఈజ్ ఆల్సో రిటన్ ఆన్ దిస్ మెడాలియన్.
కనుక దీనిని చక్కగా ఎవరైనా సంస్కృతం చదివేటువంటి పిల్లడే ఉంటుంటే తప్పక చదవచ్చు.
ఇఫ్ దేర్ ఇస్ ఎనీ వన్ హూ కెన్ రీడ్ ది సాంస్క్రిట్ స్క్రిప్ట్ he can read it very well what is written on this.
Nen bhavishyat nen cheppagurdi meer chadive cheppala
inkoka inkoka try
chestu inka chaala varaku inka munmundu raaboyedantha kudanu కేవలం ఒక యువకుల నుంచినే కూడాను ఈ భారతదేశాన్ని వ్యాప్తి గావించి క్రమక్రమేణ ఈ భారతదేశం యొక్క ఆధ్యాత్మిక యొక్క చరిత్రను యావత్ ప్రపంచానికి కూడాను చాటేటువంటి వ్యక్తులుగా కూడాను కేవలం రామకృష్ణ పరమహంస దగ్గర కొంతమంది మాత్రమే వివేకానంద బ్రహ్మానందం ఇలాంటి వాళ్ళంతా వచ్చారని, కానీ అలాంటి సన్యాసిత్వం మాత్రం తీసుకోనక్కర్లేదు. మీరు సామాన్యమైనటువంటి బాలకులుగానే ఉంటుండి యావత్ ప్రపంచానికంతా అయిన రీతిగా చూపించేటువంటి విధానాన్ని కూడాను ఏ ఏ రీతిగా నడచాలి ఎక్కడెక్కడ ఉండాలి అనేటువంటి వాళ్ళ యొక్క గుణగణాలను కూడాను వర్ణించినటువంటిది ఇందులో ఉంటుండాలి. కనుక రేపు మీకెందుకంటే ఈనాడు పిల్లలంతా చేరటం చేత ఈనాటి పిల్లల యొక్క భవిష్యత్తు ముందు ఏ రీతిగా మారుతుందనేటువంటి దాన్ని మీరు హృదయంలో పెట్టుకుని మీరు క్రమక్రమేణ అతి జాగ్రత్త లోపల మీరు స్వామి యొక్క ఐడియాస్ కంతా తగినటువంటి ఆదర్శవంతులుగా మీరు తయారవుతారని చెప్పిన ఉద్దేశాన్ని నిరూపించే నిమిత్తమై దీన్ని మీకు చూపించాను. నిదానంగా మీకు ఒక్కోటి మీకు మీరు అంటే క్లియర్గా మీకు అర్థమయ్యేటట్టుగా చెప్పి మిమ్మల్ని సంతోషపెట్టాలి. మీరేమి కంగారు పెట్టుకోనక్కర్లేదు. స్వామి మీ సొత్తుగా అయినప్పుడు స్వామి మీ చేతిలో ఉంటున్నప్పుడు ఇవంతా ఏమి సులభమైంది. కనుక మీరు దీని నిమిత్తమే మీరు ప్రాకలాడనక్కర్లేదు. దీన్ని ఎవరు తీశారో వారే మీ చేతికి ఉంటున్నప్పుడు మీ స్వాధీనంలో ఉంటున్నప్పుడు మీకు ప్రియులుగా ఉంటున్నప్పుడు ఇక దీన్నంతా మీరు యోచించక్కర్లేదు. మీకు ఏ రీతిగా చేర్చాలో ఏ రీతిగా మార్చాలో ఏ రీతిగా కూర్చాలో అవన్నీ స్వామి చేసి తప్పక మీకు ఈ భారతదేశం యొక్క భవిష్యత్తును ఎంత ధర్మము పురాతన ధర్మం కంటే కూడాను ఇంకా అభివృద్ది అయినటువంటి ఒక ధర్మంగా కూడా అనాది కాలంలో ఏదో అర్థం అయ్యి కానట్టుగా జరిగిపోయింది. ఇది అట్ట కాదు. ప్రతి ఒక్కటి కూడాను అర్థంలో చూసినటువంటి చేయవలే కూడాను ప్రతిదాని కూడా మీరు నిదర్శనంగా చూడటానికి ఇంకా స్వామి యొక్క రూపాలు ఎన్నో మీరు చూడటానికి కూడాను అవకాశాలంతా ఉంటున్నాయి. దీన్ని పోగొట్టుకోకుండా దీన్ని దక్కించుకొని దీన్ని కాపాడుకోవటానికి మాత్రం మీరు తగిన ప్రయత్నం చేయండి అంతే చాలు.
ఇన్ ది కేస్ ఆఫ్ రామకృష్ణ పరమహంస he had to use only one or two persons, Vivekananda and Brahmananda, who were in the form of sannyasis. You don't have to become sannyasis. In this particular task of mine, I am going to use you young people in a large measure as you are, putting you in the right path. Use you as instruments for doing all that is intended to be done and all that is described here on this particular materialized item. And why do you hanker after this thing when the person who has produced this is here and he belongs to you? Why do you want to look at what has been produced? I who have produced this, I belong to you. I will look after you and I will tell you what to do. And slowly, don't be in a haste. What has been described here, what I intend to do in the next 46 years and whom I am going to use and how I am going to use, how you will be put on the right path, will all be described by me to you item by item in due course. Don't be in a haste. Only remember that you should take the determination and you should appreciate the task which you are called upon to do, and you should determine to follow the task and take the right path. This is all that you have to do. The rest will be looked after by me. I belong to you and I am with you. And why do you think of what I have produced? Moreover, in future you will see me in many different forms which are manifestations of myself.
Yeah, I mean, this indeed was a very beautiful clip. And in fact, you know, it's so perfectly placed in this discussion, because what happened on that day when Swami materialized this medallion was quite close to what we're discussing today.
Uh-huh.
In fact, you know, that morning, it seems Swami had gone out for a picnic with all the boys. And Swami was on a hilltop where Swami had, I think, breakfast or something with all the boys. And at the end of that, Swami said, who's coming for a race? Okay, who's ready for a running race?
A running race? Okay. With Swami?
With Swami. And Swami said, whoever wins, I will give them whatever they want.
Wow.
Okay, Swami said, I'll give whatever they want. So immediately all boys geared up. And Swami said, who reaches the bungalow first, where Swami was staying, the residence? So a few boys started.
So Swami was going to participate?
Swami was going to participate in the running race. Swami said, okay, ready, steady, go. And some boys started sprinting. And Swami, the Mr. Swami that he is, what he did, he got into the car and started. Okay, and so these boys were running towards the bungalow, and Swami got into his car and started, you know, participating
That's
in the race.
Cheating.
But what beautiful thing Swami did was, as these boys were running towards the bungalow, Swami took the long route which would take Swami into the town and then back, you know, towards the, so giving the boys a chance to
win the race.
You know, win the race. So by the time Swami's car reached the residence, some of these boys had already reached there, and they were, apparently they had beaten Swami in the race. Okay. So Swami said, oh boys, so you have won, you have won. So Swami came there, and then Swami said, okay, I promise to give you whatever you want. Swami asked, what do you want? And I think if you spend few years with Swami, you know what to ask for.
Swami, we want you, Swami.
So, you know, in unison, all those boys said, Swami, we want you and we want only you. Swami said, okay, you want me? This evening I'll give you me. That is what Swami said.
And that was when he materialized.
That is when Swami had that discourse, and Swami materialized his medallion, and Swami revealed this. And that is exactly what Swami is telling towards the end of that clip which we heard. Swami is saying that the Lord who has materialized this, the Lord who holds the future in his hand, you have made him a part of your heart.
He belongs to you.
He belongs to you. What do you need to seek anymore?
You know, when you were telling about this race, I know it's almost time for us to conclude, but I was reminded of one small thing, you know, where Bharata, the brother of Lord Rama, you know, as children they're playing, and Bharata goes crying to mother. And mother asks, what happened? He says, you know, this is very unfair. We were playing a game and Rama is being unfair. So mother says, what? And Bharata says, mother, Rama is a much better player than me, I agree. But whenever we play, just in order to make me happy, he loses, mother, and makes me win. This is unfair. This is unfair. And you know, that kind of, you know, love, nobility is something that only the divine can express. And that is what we saw here also. He sets up a race. He makes you win. He gives you the credit and then rewards you for doing so also. Everything he does, and yet makes it appear as if you have, you know, won it by sheer effort and through your own effort and work.
Right.
That is Swami's beauty. That is the thing, like they say, God does everything but acts as if he does nothing. Man does nothing but acts as if he does everything. I think, you know, Prem, on this subject, we have got a lot more to discuss.
And I mean, you know, interesting thing is, even as I look back, I think this whole discussion which you're having today started with the topic of love, which we started on February 14th. And I think all the satsangs which you had, hence the three satsangs, are all actually offshoots of that concept of love, and that itself shows us how deep it is, you know, this idea of love. And
we can never comprehensively cover it. It's like if somebody asks, have you swam? Can you swim all around the Atlantic Ocean? We just cannot. But you know, one thing we know, wherever we fall into the ocean, it is the Atlantic Ocean. The water is having the same taste, it is the same. So we just keep swimming as long as we get tired. In the same way, yes, in this ocean of love.
Right, exactly. You know, as it is beautifully said, a poet once said that you cannot swim across the whole ocean. But if you become a salt doll and dissolve in the ocean, then you can.
You become part of the ocean.
You become part of the ocean, and there's no question of you not being able to swim across the ocean. I think that is true with Swami's love too. We can never understand it. And I think if we dissolve in that love, then we become one with that love and we'll know what that love really is. So dear listeners, I think it's time now to wrap this afternoon satsang. It was indeed a pleasure to have all your company, and we thank Swami for giving us this opportunity to sit here and think about Him, and we pray that He gives us more such opportunities. And till we meet next week,
we shall try to discuss and pray and get more incidents and stories and insights on this beautiful topic of seeking Swami vis-a-vis seeking things that Swami is able to give us. Till then, we would like to leave you with this beautiful song. Hope you enjoy it. And on the other side of the song, as always, you will have Brother Chandu from Team Radio Sai taking you along with Love to Love.
अर्पण करने हम दिल का नजराना लाए हैं तेरे दरबार में हम आए हैं आज तेरे दरबार में हम आए हैं आज पल पल ये दिल में रहे याद रहे हरदम हरदम दरबार में हम आए हैं आज दरबार में हम आए हैं आज दुनिया भर के लोग यहाँ झोली फैलाए आते हैं दुनिया भर के लोग यहाँ झोली फैलाए आते हैं तेरे कदमों याद रखने की बात आती है कहाँ
जी साईं के दर पे आकर साथ उनके रहकर बात उनकी सुनकर नजर से नजर मिलाकर
मैं भूलूं कैसे
मैं चाहता हूँ कि परेशान न करे उनका ख्याल
मगर वो जो है कि मेरे ख्वाबों में
आए जाते हैं, वो आए या ना आए ये मर्जी उनकी है, हम उनकी राह में नजर बिछाए जाते हैं। या अल्लाह, तेरी हर बात
को जाता हूँ मैं,
को जाता हूँ मैं, इतना को जाता हूँ मैं
कि भूल जाता हूँ कि तेरे पास हूँ या दूर हूँ,
भूल जाता हूँ कि तेरे पास हूँ या दूर हूँ, भूल जाता हूँ कि तेरे पास हूँ या दूर हूँ।
अल्लाह तेरी हर बात हर चमन की महक तुझसे है,
महक तुझसे है, महक तुझसे है,
धड़कते हर दिलों की धड़क तुझसे है,
धड़क तुझसे है, धड़क तुझसे है,
जिंदा जिंदगी की जान तुझसे है,
जान तुझसे है, आन तुझसे है, शान तुझसे है,
तेरे दरबार में
पल
ये दिल में रहे, याद रहे हर दिन।